2026. We are back. We have made it. New year, same smut peddling, tasteless podcast, Underground Espionage, episode 42. Tara, we're here. We did it.
Yay. Can you believe it?
I can't actually believe it. Yeah, you know, we had talked about doing an episode before the end of the year, but after our Signal Man episode, after our Christmas Eve episode, but we opted to just take a break that week. Maybe it was for, you know, reasons, you know, maybe there was some...
Maybe there were grumpy moods. Maybe there was too much merrymaking that was had. You know, maybe we needed to sleep off some of the indulgences of the end of the year. But we did watch After the Thin Man.
We did say that that's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. And we did watch it. And it is great. It just, at this point, it wouldn't really make sense.
It's not really relevant
to
anymore.
Do it. So we knew we had to kick the year off with something great and something specific to us, a movie that's been with us since the very beginning, a movie that I always think about watching together, and that being Russ Meyer's Up. So I'm excited. What are you doing with that microphone? You are distracting me. You are already first episode of the year. You're throwing me just like a
I don't know.
What is going on with that
microphone? It wasn't I, but everything is wonky. And it's like everything was, every screw was loosened. Every hinge was unhinged. The angles were all wrong. I don't know what happened to it. Maybe in our merrymaking, we rolled around on it and crushed it somehow. I don't know what happened, man. I'm uncomfortable and everybody's going to hear a lot of mic noise because it can't.
What can we do to get you to get comfortable? Because we can't do this. We cannot. I cannot do a whole episode looking at you.
I'm fine now. Now I'm grand. I feel awesome. This is fantastic. I have socks on to retain the heat, the warmth of my feet, not to make them warm.
No, that's not.
That's what socks do. They retain your foot warmth, but they don't make them warm.
Look, that's not, none of that. None of this is true. We're already starting the year off spreading lies, spreading insanity. And that's just how it is. That's how it goes.
Well,
look,
can we briefly cover the thing that you have said that is something that I do that actually, the only thing that I do that actually annoys you and like legitimately annoys you, because I saw the look on your face.
Yes, yes.
Now, do you want to just like air it out right now?
Well, I mean, I'm sure it's been discussed, but I guess, you know, it's a good way to start off the year just to reestablish this thing. And we have talked to other people about this who do side with you, which is I don't like.
Exactly.
And it's something that it's incredibly annoying, and it is the way your choice of bookmarks. It is by far, you know, I've said many times, there not one person in the entire world, in the history of you and I being together, will have ever heard me say even a slightly negative thing about you. I think that's 100% true.
I think I
could go to a court.
Yes.
Like a swear in a Bible. If anything has ever been said, I say this when you're present.
That's true. We air out the grievance together.
But yeah, it's absolutely maddening when you pick. There's so many things around here that could be just a simple bookmark.
Yeah.
You choose to pick the most aggravating thing that's going to misshape in the book, or it's like too big. It's an eyesore.
No, I thought I was being good.
No,
I thought I was being good.
It's an eyesore. You know, you need to mark a book. That's all you need to do. You don't need it to be like this.
Anything's a bookmark if it holds the page.
No.
It's not performative.
No, I really truly believe that you willfully, I mean, I'm sure at this point, obviously, because it's become a thing. But
I try not to.
See, even
I
you
really
saying
don't.
You try not to, I think is
no.
Is,
I'm
calling bullshit.
Everybody, okay. Here's the thing. So look, before we were together, Yes, maybe I had some habits that weren't great. I dog-eared the books. I liked writing in books. You know
what? I don't mind dog-earing.
Because
how's
I was
that?
Like, it's actually, my book, so I can write in it, right?
I do not mind a dog-ear. That doesn't bother me. Okay. Dog-ear does not bother me.
All right. Well, so I would dog-ear. I had a variety of habits, you know, for bookmarks. Tissues, I think, were probably the one that drove you the most insane when I would just throw a tissue
no,
in there.
No, nail file. That drives me insane.
That's flat. No, bobby pin. And it bobby pin because it hooks the book.
And it misshapens everything. And again, I don't mind. Okay. I like a good loved in book, but I like it from natural wear and tear, not from putting
reading.
Something ridiculous.
Okay,
as using
so
it as a bookmark.
I have reformed and I have been making an effort. Like when we are doing initiation services and we're cutting scraps of cardstock, we keep
so
piles
many.
Of it so that I can
we
use them for bookmarks
hundreds,
and I can use them for scrap paper and all kinds of things.
Hundreds that are that can either be cut to a good size
well,
or already. A
I
good
didn't
size.
Know because my pet peeve about these little tiny bookmarks is I don't like losing my bookmark in the book. I want to see exactly where that page is. I don't want it to slip down into the book and then I
Fine.
Have to search for it.
Fine.
So maybe I had a small half-size book about the size, let's say about the size of a Blu-ray disc, right, Mike? And then I had a piece of paper in it that stuck out on three of the sides and I didn't know that that would annoy you.
Stuck
I just thought it would
on
be...
on all three sides. It was a giant piece of cardstock. It was such an eyesore.
Well, I thought you'd be proud that I used cardstock. I thought you'd be like, wow, look at that. She's using the cardstock.
Fair. Okay. At least it's flat. It's a cardstock, but it's sticking out all over
the
place.
Sticking out less than an inch.
Sticking out all over the place.
Well, then you can see that I was using
a
good bookmark.
An eyesore.
Well, so then I cut it in half, and you were like, still too wide. Sticks out on two sides. Why are you doing
this? Just have it stick out of the top.
But then you cut like a piddly little piece. It's like 3 inches long. And then I feel like it's just going to flop out, and I'll never know what page it was on. And then I have to spend all my time.
Check this out. For today, we will be referencing an interview in the first issue of Answer Me. We have the all four-issue collection here. It's big. Magazine
big.
Size.
Big.
Look at the size of the bookmark I put in to the
See, that's
going to
fall out.
Why? No, it's
You're
going
to lose your page.
No, it's not. Right
Look,
there.
Look right there.
Look at that.
We'd never use that.
Boom.
It's so little.
Boom.
So Look. Little. Easily lost. You need to reference it handy. You pick it up. Falls right out.
Look, Tara, if that is your only flaw...
It's my only flaw. That's right. I really thought I was being good. I really did think I was being
good. I feel like you were kind of trolling me.
I was not trolling you. I truly, I'm telling you honestly, like I would tell you if I was trolling you a little because I've trolled you before.
Okay.
And I would tell you, but I'm not. I truly thought I was doing a good job.
Okay.
I was like, I get it. And then sometimes I like a big one because if I'm reading a book and I like words and things in it, like before, Mike, you've said that I get distracted by looking up words when I'm reading a book.
Yes.
So now I take the bookmark and I have a pen and then I write down the words I like on the bookmark.
Yeah,
and then
I
go back to the words after I'm finished reading and I look them up.
I can appreciate that.
Or I write down little things so that I don't look at my phone
and
get
distracted.
Yeah,
I think it's important to not... I do think when you're reading, it's important to not... Like, look, I think just go with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe when you're done with your session, you can look something up. But yeah, I just always think it's important to not get trapped in that.
Yeah, well, that's been my new thing because then I use excuses. I'm like, well, I'm looking up words. I can look at my phone because I'm looking up words. But no, we just want to stay invested in it and then I can go back to it later.
That's a big theme of this year so far, staying in the zone, not allowing yourself to leave the zone. That's something that I am very focused on because, you know, look, there's for various uninteresting talking about on podcast reasons. It was a strange last couple weeks.
Yeah.
That, again, just I call it life stuff, you know, nothing to get into here, but has definitely ended the last year and started this year in a bit of a strange haze.
On an odd note.
So now that haze is clearing, I'm very dedicated to many different things, including underground espionage, as well as obviously recording and doing all that. But just staying in the zone and not letting that life stuff, you know, keeping that shield up from that stuff, you know.
Well, I mean, that's why we have this stuff, art stuff, creation stuff. Enjoying other people's art.
To me, that's life.
That's it, yeah. And
that's why we have it. That is the life, mm-hmm. you know, that we lead, and it's frustrating when...
other mundane stuff tries to get in the way.
But you know what? Not allowing it.
No, and it's been great. And this fits right. I mean, like, I've been working on some eroticism stuff and talking about staying in the same headspace. Russ Meyer really stays in the same
headspace.
This
was what we needed to kick the year off. But still been a lot of cool stuff just in general that we've watched, listened to since our last episode. Definitely want to give a shout out and a recommendation for a podcast and a specific episode, the Sin Syndicate podcast, their recent episode. Actually, I think they might have put out a new one today, but the last one we listened to was an interview with Lisa from Something Weird, and it's awesome. Mm-hmm. Super long, super in-depth. And that's a really cool podcast that end of the year been checking out. It highlights to me just sort of the different approaches to these types of things. Their podcast is more sexploitation. They don't necessarily do porn, but, you know, obviously they're into that stuff. Mm-hmm. But they're very well-researched, you know, historical. We're like that on Noise Extra.
Yeah.
Whereas here, Underground Espionage is more like the madness of our week. And then that madness then gets wrapped up in the movie we talk about. I mean, we obviously, you know, do some research. We do, but it's more our madness and our reaction to the thing we watched that week.
And we may
right?
have done the research, but we don't even put it in there because it doesn't.
So it's just, I like the different approaches to these things, but it's a cool podcast that is very great on the history aspect of sexploitation stuff. But the Something Weird interview is just highly recommend going to check that out. But yeah, since
I think of it this way, we're into the appreciation.
Well, and again, it's just part of this whole series, this whole podcast is just, it's documenting our madness. I think that's a good way of putting it. Got some great stuff since the last episode, the Vinegar Syndrome sale landed. Some great stuff from Saturn's core. Specifically, one that really enjoyed is the Evil Maker. Great, love the cover. With the great picture. I sent you a great picture of you. Like, it's a really good picture. I'm not great at taking pictures.
Yeah,
that cover is so good that just. But then the picture I took of it. Yeah.
Well, now you'll have to put it up, and so everybody can see your wonderful picture.
Well, I'm sure.
Can you describe it? How'd you achieve the lighting? What'd you do?
I'd like to just do an episode on it, and then...
Oh, okay. Well, then we can just use it.
Someday we'll get to
that. I think we can use your wonderful photo.
Possibly. But yeah, that was a highlight of the batch. Also, the AGFA mixtapes is something we've been watching a lot.
The AGFA mixtapes kind of saved us for a while. Yeah, the AGFA mixtapes, you can just kind of throw them on and let them run.
Yeah, and you just don't know what you're going to get. It's the mystery mixtapes. I don't even want to say what's on them because if you haven't gotten them, I want you to... have the mystery unfold before you.
Well, I mean, we can tell, like, there's some commercials, there are some TV spots, and they're great because they follow themes. Some of the themes are, like, horror, the Western themes, like, strange dancing themes. You know, like, you have each of those, so there is a flow to the mixtapes.
Yeah.
But I really appreciate them because it's like getting, you know, a VHS from your buddy. And you're on tour, and it's much like that, just like strange commercials, strange dances, like a Joey Heatherton Sort of Sleeper is not in it, but you would anticipate something like that. Yeah. Some ads of that nature would be in there.
Honestly, that helped us a lot, as well as Vice Academy 1 and 2. So Vice Academy, that was our New Year's Eve. Mm-hmm. Oh. I think we did state, I think on the last episode we did, the plan was we were going to go see Danzig Sings Elvis on New Year's Eve, but that plan just, it did not come to
Everybody
fruition.
Got sick. I mean, there's a lot of mundane things that happened, and so that didn't. So what did we do? We watched Vice Academy 1 and 2.
Or no, we watched Murder Rock and Vice Academy, and then Vice Academy 2 on New Year's Day.
Dude,
that's how we started. We've
watched so much.
And
I had said I was going to write it down. I even made a slutty little journal to write it down, and I didn't do it. So let's do that later. But Murder Rock is insane.
Yeah.
He's trying to do fame.
Yeah, Lucio Fulci.
Lucio Fulci is trying to do fame. And as a horror movie, and it's so bizarre. everybody's just like getting misted while they're like dancing around in bikinis, but none of them are dancers clearly. And we did watch the behind the scenes on it, and that was confirmed, because like as we're watching, I was like, Mike, I don't believe that any of these people have ever danced.
Yeah.
Like, and he's like, oh, what do you mean, Tara? And then that's like the first thing behind the scenes. They're like, yeah, they're mostly picked on looks other than, you know, dancing ability. You would think there would be some dancers, but no. So that was really wild. I loved Murder Rock.
But then one
of the songs were just
bonkers.
Great.
But the craziest thing that actually the most jarring thing of the whole movie was this insistence on these flashing lights. It might be.
Oh, that's right. It was the flashing.
I always laugh about that and like, you know, warning, you know, when they give you the warning for this movie, it's like smoking, flashing lights. And it's like this movie, it's because what happens is, for whatever reason, in this dance school, when they're it's like closing in 15 minutes or whatever, the lights just turn on and off for 15 minutes in the school, and then while you're watching,
and they flash like when you're in the locker room.
Yeah,
and it is
nauseating.
And let's just say the day before that day may have been a rough day, and then I rough day in terms of us just going bonkers, like fuck this, like, you know. I didn't drink an extreme amount of wine. I drank a bottle of red wine, right? Well, half a bottle of red wine, half a bottle of white wine.
You say that.
I do say that, and I stand by it, because the next day I took a count. I counted. And how is it that I had like one of the worst hangovers of my life? Everybody, I don't want to make us sound like savages, degenerates.
We're episode 42.
But
if you've been listening,
savages,
you know,
like,
what goes on here.
Us. Like, sometimes we're savages and degenerates. And let's just say I slept most of that day on the bathroom floor. Now, it was cozy.
It
was because I was so happy.
But I did set you up. I got you your pillow. I got you a blanket. I got your contacts out. And yes, you spent the first part of your sleep that night in the bathroom.
Well, you know what?
But you were so nice.
But why?
There is pictorial evidence of that, but I won't be posting it.
Only sent that to my closest friend so that we could giggle together. You did make my butt look nice in that photo, so that was great.
Nice.
So thank you, sir. But I mean, I don't know how that happened, because I just feel that the amount of wine I drank did not merit the level of sleeping on the floor blackout hangover that I had the next day. So that going into it, you were trying to watch things to improve the mood. And then Murder Rock was the flashiest, most vomit-inducing thing that I could have possibly watched. I had to put a pillow over my face. I was like,
And then when someone's murdered and then the police come and they're taking the crime scene pictures, for some reason they have a wall of light
that just keeps flashing into it.
It is the most, I wasn't even that bad. And I was definitely like, dude, this,
for some reason, Fulci was like, more flashing, squirt them with water. And then, he just kept inserting dance numbers needlessly into it. So more dancing, more flashing. Hose them down. Let's go. Anyway, it's fun.
Vice Academy was more the right speed after that. I mean, Murder Rock was great. You know, we had a great time.
No.
But, like, Vice Academy is perfect for New Year's Eve night.
You know what? Vice Academy is a good movie. And, you know, I'll stand by it. Vice Academy 1, Vice Academy 2.
Yeah, fantastic.
Plot you can follow. Dialogue that you love. Really enjoyable characters that you are rooting for. Nonstop action, not a dull moment. What is bad about either of these films? Like,
absolutely fantastic.
Faultless, Mike.
I'm excited to watch the
faultless.
Other ones, because I've never seen any of the other ones. They go into the end of the 90s, so I can only imagine how odd it gets by about 98.
Because they just make me think of, like, something that would have played on USA.
That's where they were mainly shown on Up All Night.
Yeah,
you know?
So it's like, I mean, I can imagine, but... But I'm going to stand by these two films, and I'm going to say that they are fun, joyful, perfect level of irreverence and self-awareness. They do what they said they were going to do. You know, frequently, like when you're let's bring it back to wine for me. You know, like when you're having a wine and people say, like, is it good or bad? Is it sweet, dry? What, you know, what people want descriptions. And sometimes you just need a wine to be varietally correct, right?
Yeah.
You want a Côte du Rhône to taste like a Côte du Rhône. You want to get that, you know, jamminess of the Grenache. You want it to be well balanced. You know, you need that like weight of the Syrah in there. You want a California cab to be a little bit oaked, right? You want a French cab to be a little more austere, you know, depending on the region. It's the Bordeaux, right? You want the blend with Merlot. You want things to taste like they should. A Willamette Pinot, you want it to be lighter body. You don't need it to be heavily oaked. So much like the wines that need to be varietally correct or regionally correct, this film does exactly what it sets out to do. And I appreciate that about it. I have no fault. 94 points.
Absolutely. And then we switch things up like we like to do here. You gotta you switch things up. We finished off the first day of the year with The Keep, which was incredible. Oh. That'll be a fun one to do an episode on at some point. But that was just, again, we're like, Vice Academy 2, into The Keep. How about it? We'll do that.
Yeah. And,
really great.
And we
had never seen it.
We had never seen it. We realized it. And we were waiting for the right moment because it felt like it was going to be one of those awesome, like, serious toned, heavy.
And it was.
And it just felt like it was going to handle the supernatural well. And we were not wrong. Like,
incredible.
It handled. I love when the supernatural is left open-ended. You really have, like, suspended disbelief when they tap into, much like, you know, you would have with, like, Clive Barker, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just that feeling of, like, there are ancient powers that go beyond all of us and that they are potent and shouldn't be tampered with and should be respected. And it kind of approaches The Keep from that area. And then having it set in Romania, which again, you kind of think of like buried pockets in Romania where things could happen that can't happen anywhere else. You know, like it's very insular and it seems very old and it seems very like untouched, much kind of like, you know, the hills of Kentucky might have that inspired people to make things such as Deliverance, where it's like, you're not in Kansas anymore type of situation.
Super, super great. And yeah, that'll be a definitely do an episode on that at some point. Maybe read the book and do it, you know, just do a full thing. And then been plowing through a big rule we've been having is if a thing is in shrink wrap, those are the first things to go for. So that's what we did with all these. These are movies we had. The Vice Academies, you know, obviously we had seen, but we had gotten the new Blu-ray of those. Mm-hmm. So that was, you know, that technically still in the shrink wrap. You can still have seen
technically.
It. But we've been going through the Forgotten Gialli boxes and watched Reflections in Black and Rings of Fear. Both great.
Yes.
I especially like Reflections in Black, maybe because of all the redheads.
Oh, yes. I was trying to remember which was which. Again, the titles are always... Mm-hmm. I struggle.
Yeah,
with Giallo
titles a lot of times are, you know, they don't... Like Rings of Fear, there really wasn't...
No, there's no rings. There certainly was fear.
Yeah.
Were there rings?
No, I don't like.
I already forgot which was which.
Or like Reflections
in
Black, like, you know, just sort of okay, you know.
Yeah, gorgeous.
I mean, it's amazing. I'm saying, but the title, yes, you can't always remember.
It was absolute eye candy. Both of them truly were that, like, not the type of giallo where you're not like given clues that you're eager to follow and you're trying to figure out what was happening and that you need to watch closely. It was more of a just kind of let it happen. There's no way
to
let
it unfold, especially Rings of Fear. I think I think Reflections in Black a little more, or at least you could maybe figure out maybe not who did it, but part of the twist, what it would be. But Rings of Fear definitely was just sort of we actually had to rewind when the killer basically confesses and says what happened.
Is that true?
And then we watch it like, wait a minute, what did he say? And then we rewound it to sort of...
Yeah, and then the killer like confesses and then suddenly kills himself. But I honestly didn't even clock that he was confessing so much.
Yeah.
I thought he was just kind of saying things that happened. And then I was like, oh, wait. Then he killed himself in a really ridiculous way, which was awesome and I appreciate it.
Yeah.
But I was a bit stunned and taken aback, and I was like, "Oh wait, was that the killer?"
Yeah.
Oh shoot!
So we
again, it's the type of thing where again, it's good for what it is, but I would say don't overthink the plots of either one of those, or don't overthink the script because it's not the type of thing. There's a lot of holes.
I mean,
it's not going to hold water. There's a hole in that bucket. It's okay.
I'm a big proponent of not retrofitting things. You know, I feel like there was a certain time, in the mid 2000s, kind of the 2000 early 2010s, maybe, where all of a sudden giallo was seen as this like this high art,
yeah,
you know, mean like all these like meaningful and symbolic and all this stuff. Yeah. And these people were made as total trash. Like, let's be very clear.
But people were doing, like, gallery installations with, like, Suspiria.
And there's new movies that came out that are, like, fake giallo that were, like, surreal and all this stuff. It's like, dude, these were made as trash at the time. They were not. I don't.
The books were trash.
I don't like to think of them that way. Trash. That doesn't mean we don't love them and revere them and love all these things about them. But I'm not going to sit here and talk about them being these, like, you know, art house movies. They were made they were these trashy murder mystery movies, you know.
And they're great to look at.
Amazing. Yeah. So I love that about movies like The French Sex Murders or like these, Reflections Black, or what's the one we did last year, the AAA Masseuse.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
That
yes.
one.
Good-looking something.
Love that Masseuse, stuff. Love the trashiness of these, and that's what I look for. So I don't care about whatever these new ones
but
are.
My notes fell behind the couch. But sometimes there's a solid... No, I didn't catch them. But sometimes there's a solid thing.
Their notes. That's gonna be actually pretty hard to get those notes.
I just found a nail file. I could use that for a bookmark.
Oh my god!
No.
Tara, do you want to? Do we have to actually pause and move the couch?
Yeah, we're gonna have to pause.
All right, we're gonna pause.
It's way back there. I forgot about that painting behind the couch too.
Let's we'll pause and come back.
Buenos dias. I am your Greek chorus, your cacophony of carnality, the embodiment of the body, and your Sherpa of suspense. Now come. Come, take my hand, and if you dare, sheathe your sword to its hilt. Are you up to it?
All right, the notes have been retrieved, and it is time to discuss one of our all-time favorite movies, a movie that goes back with you and I, Tara, back to our beginnings, Russ Meyer's Up.
Up.
And I want to start with
Up all night.
You got it. And I want to start with a quote from Russ Meyer, from the Russ Meyer, the world's best director, article and interview in the first issue of Answer Me. And Russ was asked, how do you respond to persons who say your movies are sexist? Russ says, I say, yeah, right, that's true. I found a long time ago never to, or by and large, don't get up and try to defend your position. After a while, the questioners will go away. And that is something that is so, so true. When someone accuses you of something, you just say, yep,
all right.
Nope, you're right, because anytime you want to explain, defend, apologize, it never works. It only adds to the accusations. You know, it made me think of Tara, the time one of our oft-referenced responses someone had to an episode of Noise Extra, where we had our friend Susie on Podblast. And the comment from someone was, finally, a woman. Now, not to mention that Tara's been on just about every single episode of Noise Extra. She's
finally
one of the co-hosts,
a woman.
But you're not enough.
No.
And so what do? You don't. You just laugh. Because what do you do? Yeah. These people are, you don't, you, there's nothing you can do, right?
Yeah.
And so when someone accuses Russ Meyer of being sexist, being misogynist, what's the answer? Yeah,
sure.
You got it. And this movie is just that perfect. It's not you don't defend it. You don't try to explain it away. Is this movie offensive? Is this movie tasteless? Is this movie over the top? Yes, 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 and that is why we love it.
Yeah, and if somebody doesn't understand why that wouldn't appeal to someone, I mean, you know, again, everything doesn't have to be for everybody, right?
Yeah.
This is not a movie for children. This is not a movie for some adults. Yeah. You know what I mean? But it's a movie for us kind of adults.
It's a movie
for you
us
kind of adults, you
exactly
wonderful people. Thank you for being with us here today. But, you know, it's not what every movie should be. Well, I would love it if it was.
I mean, it's what our movie should be.
But again, it is that thing where, you know, there's no dancing around it. It's this film, Russ Meyer, any of his films, they're not pretending like we don't want to see buxom gals
yeah
jumping around
yeah
and they're acting, you know, like even down to like the ridiculously large prosthetic dongs
yeah
slapping around some guy's knees. Like there's this over the topness to it that makes it fun, that makes it exciting, that makes it classless, and makes it perfect.
And it's not in the way that prosthetic dicks are done nowadays,
which
it's
constantly prosthetic dicks.
Everything is
prosthetic dicks.
This is done in a over-the-top cartoonish way
yes
that is purposefully being like ridiculous,
yeah,
not like some sort of thing they do nowadays where for whatever ridiculous reason they do. You know, it's not in
yeah
the way of this, not in a ridiculous
yeah
way that Russ Meyer is doing it.
Yeah, it's there. I mean, there's a lot of dull reasons for it.
Exactly.
You know?
But I'll
and
tell you
what. And this is not also a bunch of actresses who are ready to quit their profession because they're forced to kiss someone.
Exactly.
Oh, no, I have to kiss someone.
And we will talk about
yeah
the great interview that Raven Delacroix
yeah
gives that is part of the extra of this fantastic Severn Blu-ray. But Tara, take it away. How do your notes begin? How do we begin discussing Russ Meyer's 1976 romp Up?
I mean, that's a big ask. I don't even know how to begin discussing it. But, you know, we can just say that we start out with the one and only Kitten Natividad as our Greek chorus. And, like, again, Russ Meyer putting a Greek chorus in this film to like move it along, to add more eye candy, to add this another element of just like legitimacy in the face of illegitimacy
and absurdity, right?
Yeah,
so
absurdity.
It's absurd.
100%.
You have
a Greek chorus,
hot Kitten Natividad naked, like grinding on logs, running around
ecstatically, humping everything.
But you know what it made me think of when we were watching it last night, even mm the having like a Greek chorus in
yeah
a movie like this in 1976, it goes to show that people could, how do I want to put it? I'm doing a great job right
great
now.
Job.
A great job. I guess what I'm trying to say is like, people knew this stuff back then. Like you,
oh, people weren't as stupid as they are now.
Thank you. Where it could be just like a weird reference of
yeah
something like that that's not lost on people in 1976
yeah
because you read. Do kids even read Shakespeare or like
or
do they read Greek plays
yeah
or do they read these things that are referenced in a lot of great like 70s and 60s like sexploitation porn smut
yeah
where they reference like a highbrow thing.
Hey,
that
if somebody wants to read a Greek play, I'm going to recommend the Bacchae as a good intro because
yeah
it's very sleazy, much like this. There's guys with there's like Priapus who has like a small man with a dick that's bigger than him, and then that people like running around like fucking each other and drinking wine and getting wasted. The Bacchae, there's murder, everybody gets murdered. It's fun. It's, you know, a dynasty
yeah, but I'm saying,
feast.
I mean, yeah, so could you even do something like this now in a movie like this? Not that a movie like this would ever be made now, but inserting stuff like that in a very lowbrow, absurd
yeah
movie,
no,
and
exactly
it all just fits together.
Yeah, and it all just works. Yeah, it would, but also nobody would want to do that now.
Yeah.
You
yeah
know what I mean? Like, no one, and it's not even the camp element. It's too outside of the box
yeah, yeah,
of,
yeah
of what somebody would think.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
especially for something that's meant to be ingested on this level.
Yeah, yeah.
But yes, yeah, so again, take my hand and sheathe your sword to its hilt. Are you up to it? As she's like, and again, like, Kitten's ability always to perch herself upon a peak of rock
yeah
upon a tree stump, like I again, like the things that the actors are called to do, like we'll discuss this even more, but like I'm just thinking I would have so many rashes. You know what I
mean?
Yeah,
you.
I can't touch grass. I can't touch trees.
I think like,
I can touch trees that aren't pine trees.
Like,
well, not really.
Spiritually, you could be in a Russ Meyer movie. Physically, you could with the actual like running or certain physical
aspects. Yeah, doing all that stuff is fine.
But
the trees and
the
grass.
The nature, the grass, the dirt, the things. Allergic. Unfortunately, Tara, it would just, unless he was calling for an actress to have hives all over herself.
Maybe a desert scene? I don't know. I think I'm not allergic to the desert. So, dear listeners, I don't know. There's no reason to discuss boring things such as this, but I am an incredibly allergic person.
I'm sure this has probably been discussed many times.
So basically, since I was a 2-year-old, I had my allergies tested the first time because I knew they would be so exponential. And yes, and then I started shots immediately. I'm allergic to every tree that exists, every grass except for Bermuda grass, every flower, and every animal except the rabbit. So you got a rabbit, I'll pet it. Everything else, I'm going to get hives. I love them. Love you animals, but oh boy, I get hives. So onward we go.
So yes, you would not be able to be in Up, sadly.
No, but maybe the river scenes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I could run on rocks. Oh my God, can you imagine all that running on the rocks and the woods, everything? We'll go into it. So we are going to sheathe our swords up to their hilts right now as we go in. And so again, Titten, beautiful, fluffy hair, warm, welcoming, just like faultless. And we see again in the credits that there is an ichthyologist listed. We see that we have, I'm assuming that's who supplied the fish for old A. Schwartz, for old Adolf Schwartz. We have the costumes by Maureen of Hollywood, which I looked up on when we watched Super Vixens, and Maureen of Hollywood still actually exists.
So cool.
And Maureen of Hollywood was like a swimsuit designer at the time who would do customs. And Maureen of Hollywood, like, hats off to Maureen of Hollywood, because again, the costumes in here are phenomenal, and they have some big busts to hold up, Mike, wouldn't you agree? Especially this jogging
sure
costume
do.
That Raven Delacroix is wearing. So we enter our tale on the mailbox of A. Schwartz, Route 19, which is hilarious. And then we see this like giant Bavarian castle, like storybook looking thing. Route 19, A. Schwartz, hilarious, right? 18th of September at 9:47 a.m. Always they say the time. And generally, like in the intros, when it's the time, it's like 9:47 a.m. and people are fucking, or like 8 a.m. and they're at the bar. It's great. We love the absurdity of that, you know, the daily that Russ Meyer presents for us. And we have some whipping. We have a man dressed as a pilgrim. We have an assless chaps on an old Adolf.
Adolf Schwartz, of course, you know, Russ Meyer always interjecting World War II stuff, Nazi stuff. And, you know, he was a cameraman in World War II. So,
yeah.
He'd always have the German music playing, like in Super Vixens or like here,
yes.
You know, playing that stuff and just utilizing this stuff this one is the closest to like Nazi exploitation,
yeah.
Which is, you know, certainly we'll talk about Ilsa at some point and their great Nazi exploitation movies. But this just, again, has that over the top absurdity of taking Adolf Hitler, calling him Adolf Schwartz, and then he's
yes.
getting whipped, but he's listening to like Deutschland Über Alles,
yes,
and
yes.
he's like listening
he's
to
listening
like
the, to Wagner
to like Nazi yeah. marching music while he's getting
to
whipped.
Putsch die Hahnstangl.
Yeah, it's so great. It's just right away again thinking about us watching this, you know, 25 years ago, and just loving it and just getting it right away, just being like, this is so great. This is so over the top, ridiculous, absurd.
Yeah, it's Adolf Schwartz with a fucking torture dungeon where he likes to be ramrodded by big dicks.
yeah, yeah.
And like and yeah. having ethnic ladies beat him up.
But then it's also not like, you know, it's also not like social commentary. It's just
yeah,
like,
it's not
you
hitting
didn't need,
your,
you.
No.
Because
you're smart enough to understand it.
Just what it is. It's like, yeah. Stop. We don't need this. This is just like, this is what this kind of movie, the humor of it back then, it didn't, there was no explanations, there was no disclaimer, you just get it.
Yes.
Here it is.
Yes.
You either get it or you don't. And we got it immediately, and we still get it to this day.
Yeah. There's and then, you know, it ends up with a lady tying up his ankles with chopsticks in her hair and then suffocating him with her ass.
That's nice. I now,
it does look like
that,
a really fun time.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind going that way, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a bad way to go.
Yeah.
That's kind of nice.
I would not like to go the way that old Adolf Schwartz does go, though.
Yes.
Oh, because keep in mind, everybody, this is a murder mystery, this movie.
That's right.
Is
well,
it?
Yeah.
Is it?
So, you know, after old Adolf Schwartz gets rammed up the ass by Paul?
Yep, Paul, our main man.
Our main man rammed up the ass by Paul and then sucks him off with much glee. He pays an extra $100 to suck him off.
Yeah.
And then he has a little moist cutie pie lips as he's left tied up and kind of gurgling with joy. Yeah. Then he goes to take a bath to soak it off. And what happens? Some gloved villain comes in and drops a flesh-eating fish into the bath, and he is eaten alive
in his own bathtub. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's how...
Well,
none
of those fish shown, Mike. I was not the ichthyologist present on the set, but neither of those fish are a piranha. I just want to say that to you.
Well,
piranhas are kind of unremarkable looking.
Listen.
You know, their strength is in their numbers.
For all intents and purposes, it was a piranha that killed Adolf Schwartz. But who wielded that piranha? And that is what we are going to find out as we take our journey in the backwoods of California, Northern California. And we meet all of our wonderful characters here.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, oh, yeah, this is fun, my notes. Just a fetishy swinging Adolf with a rad pad. Poor boy, knocked off in a bubble bath. What a way to go. Carried a Nimrod, a savage destruction. Was it the Ethiopian chef pummeling the scrotum with joyous supplication? Was it the kamikaze of a cunning cunnilingua?
It's so good.
Oh, my God. So the Greek chorus this entire time, you know.
As you say, she seems to be the most
invested in this murder.
Yes.
So, you know, maybe we're kind of all over the map and like telling the tale of what's happening
sure
here. But let
welcome
me just
to
give
underground
a
espionage.
Yeah, welcome. You're like, what? You know what? I'm not following you. I might have to rewind it. You guys kind of have the plot read of a giallo on the lowest of budgets without a named director. Well, yes, that's true at times. But for this, if you haven't seen Up, essentially the entire film is focusing on solving the mystery, I mean, at least on paper, at least according to the chorus, the whole film is focusing on solving the mystery of who murdered Adolf Schwartz. But truly, you don't get anybody caring who murdered Adolf Schwartz other than the chorus. If the chorus wasn't constantly like bringing back to us that this is a murder mystery, we would never even think about it, because we have a wonderful heroine played by Raven de la Croix. You know, LaCroix has ruined my pronunciation
Sorry,
Raven de la Croix. Playing, you know, somebody, just a gal who's passing through. She's a freewheeling lady. She's got her Volkswagen van, and she's just looking for a good time. She wants to stay in shape. She wants to jog. She ends up working in a cafe. She ends up having sexual relations with many people and really making the Alice's Cafe take off, because everybody wants to come and marvel at her rack.
I'll read the summary that is in Answer Me.
Perfect.
Adolf Schwartz, an exiled Nazi, gets tied up, whipped, and butt-fucked in the opening sequence. While reclining in his jacuzzi, he's eaten alive by a piranha. From then on, it's a typical bag of Meyerisms, kooky rock songs, spines being snapped, and horny sheriffs. All set against California Redwood Country, a particularly tasteless one, narrated by Kitten Natividad. And I think that's
exactly
pretty much sums it right
up. I mean,
up.
Satin Lady, like the hit song.
Oh,
my
God.
Oh, my God, Satin Lady.
So I do love when we meet Margot Winchester. She's she's jogging along the windy mountainous road. Tara, how would you describe her jogging style?
Bouncy. You know, I don't... The jogging style is exactly what it needs to be.
Yeah.
It's perfect. And you know what? I wonder if in real life in her day to day if she actually jogged. I feel like no. I think she liked to stay in shape, but I don't know if jogging
she
was
her
thing.
She said she loved nature. She loved all that, but the, I mean, if she jogged like that.
Boy, she did a lot of running for this film.
She sure
running,
did.
Running, running.
And so, you know, we meet our sheriff right away, old Homer Johnson. He's kind of harassing her a little bit. Then she
he's just trying to keep everybody safe and make sure the little lady doesn't need a ride.
Well, she does get picked up by another man who proceeds to take her down into the river, and they have a great rape fight.
Larry Dean. So we open the scene after we get the murder that this whole film is trying to solve. Then we have Margot Winchester jogging, and you know this guy Larry Dean is the actor. I don't remember his character's name. And he is just really persistent. He's in a pickup truck. He really wants her to hop in. He really, really wants to take her to town. And eventually she hops in. And, you know, this is when, Mike, we remember seeing things. Like, I know that I've seen this. I remember lots of things. But
we've watched this a million times.
We've watched it a million times. But it's like I had forgotten just the extent of this rape.
Yeah,
it is
a
very, very rapey rape.
Yeah,
violent.
He's pummeling her in the river.
So he takes an alleged shortcut, and then Margot tries to escape, and he chases her into a stream where he rips her clothes off, and then he starts like punching her underwater and drowning her, and then proceeds to rape her.
He does a leg drop off.
It's like cartoonishly violent. What? I mean, it also, like, you know, he does a lot of cartoonish violence that doesn't read as violence because of the way that it's handled, you know, as a cartoon violence. But this does make you gasp for a moment.
Well, she talks about it
in
her interview.
Yes, and that's what I wanted to talk about.
It's Tara's been joking so much about whatever actress talked about quitting acting because she didn't want to kiss
Lily Sobieski.
You know, Raven talks about a lot of this stuff and the kind of rough conditions that make this movie, but in a way, she's laughing, she's smiling, she's just taking this like, that's what we did. And it's like, that's exactly how these were made. She's like, yeah, she was basically getting drowned, and she was like...
She said she met Larry Dean, and it was one of his first pictures as well. And so, you know, they both start filming the scene, and she said they were in the river together, and... He goes, I don't know what I'm going to tell my mom. I had no idea this film would be like this. And she said, me neither.
Yeah.
Because she thinks she's doing like a little like nudie cutie, like something like that. Then all of a sudden she's just getting drowned. And she said she was actually drowning during the scene. And the only way that she could get Russ to stop, because he kept saying more, more, shove her under, was to hold up her middle finger like at him so that she could signal that she was drowning.
Yeah.
And then they stopped filming.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, whatever. It was crazy and wild and not, you know, not intimacy coordinated blah, blah, blah. It's like, this is just...
And then Russ Meyer kept saying, run like a gazelle, dear. Run like a gazelle. Yeah, like, she's going, she said that those little burrs were sticking in her feet as she's running across the forest floor, like, trying not to wince in pain. Run like a gazelle, dear.
Like a gazelle. Yeah, I love it. I love it. But, you know, she does bust our man's spine, breaks him in half, flips him in the river. But old Homer Johnson sees it and is going to either take her in or he's going to, you know, do a little trade. He'll come up with a different story.
He said, looks like you hurt the boy. Because she did. But again, it's like one of those things is like that. What did he call it? What did he say karate was? Karate.
Like carroty or something. It was funny. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
So again, like that, you know, she is nude. She's been assaulted. She's been drowned. And then she wakes up and then karate chops him, flips him over and breaks his spine. Like, but again, it's one of those things where you can see how like Quentin Tarantino was influenced by this.
Obviously.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and so many people by the like, you know, karate chopping, hard kicking, busty ladies that kick ass and
but it's not in a, but like it's not in a way, again, it's not in a way that is done in this like modern over the top. Mm-hmm. This is unrealistic and it's and it's made to be unrealistic.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not trying to, like, turn it into, like, reality. Like, any of this could actually ever
happen.
Like, when
Raven DeLaCroix agreed to do the film, you know, she had asked around, like, what Russ Meyer was like. And then they told her that he makes films like comic book adventures. And I think that's a good
a
good way to say it, you know, because, again, just the language that's used, the bustiness, the dynamic ways that it's presented, like, very much like a comic book adventure.
But I like that, you know, she decides to go with the bargain and just bang old Homer because, you know, she doesn't want to get arrested. She's just, you know, she'll just, you know.
Oh, in the meantime, she talks like Mae West.
She does.
And I mentioned that she talks like Mae West.
Yeah, she does. It's pretty great. But I love the...
Okay, we can work off a trade. Work it off in flesh.
Exactly. Yeah, and I like the montages of the banging where it just, again, over the top, ridiculous. I think I've said over the top, ridiculous, and absurd about 100 times.
I've said cartoonish, like, way too much.
Yeah.
So I've said it, like, ridiculous. So I'm going to try to find some other words, but, you know. And, you know, I keep... I just kept writing down the things. Like, the chorus is so clever. Like, Russ Meyer wrote the script, but the chorus is so fun and clever. Yeah. Like, champions of fornication. One of these people has committed a murder most foul. But who? But it's like, but understanding that this isn't a naked woman perched on a tree, grinding her ass into the bark and saying things of this nature. She's standing in tall grass with, like her perfectly coiffed pubes as they kind of, like, thrust about, and she's narrating this alleged murder, which we keep forgetting about as we're seeing all these things. It's more like, what about all the rapes? But again, but it's just it's so dynamic, and it's so wonderful, and it's great to see the things that Russ Meyer focuses on, because I think that he's not denying the things that we actually like. And, like, that is one problem that I have sometimes with the modern world. And that is just insisting that we don't like things that we like.
Oh, 100%.
You know what I
mean? Gaslighting us into...
Like, yeah. I know. Like...
Again, it's just being like, is it tasteful? Is it offensive? Yeah. Or tasteless and offensive? Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not apologizing, nor defending, nor disclaiming.
I'm not proud of the things I like.
I am 100% proud.
Well, I'm just saying I don't have to be proud. Like, you don't have to be proud of everything. You can just accept it and enjoy
it.
Yeah, I mean. You know what I mean?
I guess. I don't know.
So, like,
I'm proud to love Russ Meyer.
I'm proud to love Russ Meyer. Now, that one, it's true. But the thing is, he's not denying it. He's not denying
exactly
that we want to see, that we're excited to see the exponential people, right?
Exactly.
He's not gonna deny us the sizzling burger scene, like when we go to Alice's restaurant and it's like,
man,
everybody's sitting down at the counter, slap some burger. We should go to the diner after we record.
It might happen.
Thought about it, but
I did.
I'm talking about it, I just had that vision of that burger on the griddle at Alice's restaurant in my head.
It might happen.
And then, like, people ordering, like, the haymaker. And then, like, just, like, pans of, like, eggs and then plates of bacon. And then
sounds
we see
so
all
good.
The delicious food. And
oh, burgers.
And
so
Raven
good.
DeLaCroix. It's so bad. I know it's LaCroix, but then LaCroix, the water has killed me. It's really messed it up. Anyway, she discussed that he always wanted to eat well. And I think that's another part of, you know, just, again, pleasures of the flesh. Like, eating well and showing the sizzling burgers and showing those, like, juicy mouth-watering scenes of
Dude,
greasy.
I literally, my stomach just growled.
Did it really? you're just like, oh, that did look really, really good. But there's something just slutty about the way he made those eggs look. You know, it'd be like four eggs in a pan and just like bacon on it, and they're jiggling. Or there's two eggs in a pan and it's jiggling like a pair of tits. Oh, so nice. Like, I
love it. But yeah, so we do meet. Well, actually, we met Alice. Before
Burgers
actually, we met
backseat fellatio, baby.
We met Alice actually before we met Margot briefly. She was banging a trucker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know.
a trucker lady.
Alice and Gwendolyn.
So we did meet. We actually meet Alice before we met Margot, but now we get to know Alice. She runs a diner and is with our leading man, Paul. And yeah, like you said, Tara, God, this diner just. I'm literally like, yeah. I think we got plans after this. I'm ready.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's great. So, you know, even like starting off the scene in front of the diner, then we meet the Homer again, the cop comes out, and he's trying to help a lady get her ticket fixed because she earned her ticket, but he might let her off with a warning. So what is the how does he let her off with a warning? With a little backseat fellatio.
You got it. And I like, she's like, I give great head. She's like, well, I never had bad head. You know, and that is, you know what, it's sort of like, you know, it's kind of like pizza. It's like the worst pizza in the world is still pizza, you know?
Yeah, maybe for guys. For girls, it's a little different.
Hey,
real bad. I'll tell you this, sir.
Hey. You're not talking about
not
me.
Not talking about
are
you.
Okay.
Of course not. Gracious. I would never say that.
Well, Tara.
And that's a little too Tara, specific to be discussing on a podcast, so I wouldn't be like.
Oh, yeah, Underground Espionage, we don't ever. We haven't.
I don't want everybody to feel uncomfortable.
We haven't totally peeled the curtain back and just completely.
But I'm just saying it can be bad, trust me. As a lady. As a guy, seems pretty nice. It's very different.
Tara, I'm giving Tara, you're 10 out of 10, okay?
Thank you, sir. You know, practice makes perfect. But the cartoonish way that when Homer blasts, his shoes pop open. You see him working his toes in his boots. He's like, ooh, ooh.
If I had any
and
criticism.
And I love showing the toes working in the boots.
Yeah, if I had any criticism, it's like, I don't need to see, like, you know, his, you know,
it's sock. He had socks on.
Yeah, but when he's banging, it's like when he's blasting.
No, he shows, they show his feet on the back.
I don't need to see
that. You know what? It's not everything is for everybody. It's not for you. There's other people out there who love it.
I'm sure.
And
there
they're
are.
Like, thank goodness he has hairy toes. I want to suck those hairy toes. You know what I mean? And that's for them. And that's the thing about Russ Meyer. He wasn't leaving anyone out.
You know what? You're right, Tara.
He left a little bit in for everybody.
You are right.
That's right. He's got hairy asses. He's got hairy backs. He's got
Paul. Go ahead. See, I said something that I didn't like. Now, what didn't you like?
I don't like how Paul's beard grows all the way up to his eyeballs.
Yeah.
Like, fucking trim that shit, my guy. Like, I think he has kind of a baby face, and maybe if he's too trimmed, he looks really young. But Paul, when he was in his pilgrim uniform, like, it made some sense. But, like, my goodness, trim it. It's like a bush that goes, like, all the way down to your knees. Like, the man's beard is unkempt. I don't enjoy it at all. But I know it's out there for somebody who likes really hairy, hairy guys. I guess hair in unexpected places, because he's not even that hairy. It's just hair where it shouldn't be. It's hair where it shouldn't be, and that's okay. Now, we need to get back on track. At the diner, as Paul was trying to explain what, or I don't know who it was, some guy was trying to explain what is Raven Delacroix's?
Margo.
What Margo was like, he said, oh man, she's got nipples other broads wish they had for tits. And I thought that was Homer saying it. He was bragging around a lot. I just read that quote because I just thought we should all enjoy that together. And I think that paints a beautiful picture. And isn't that true? But then another, you know, thought that I had is after this, you know, we're at the wonderful diner scene that makes me so hungry. And now I'm distractedly hungry and I just wanted to stop and go to the diner. But we're going to keep talking about this because, Mike, we need to be more horny than we are hungry, and I think that'll help us go through. So let me get everyone erect again. And just, you know, this scene is so sweet because the guy running the diner again, Paul. Yeah. Again, I have the actors' names in my head, and I can't keep the actors and the real person's name straight. Sorry. Paul catches Margo in the parking lot, and she said she was going to go for a swim. And he was like, well, I know a nice little secluded place we could all go for a little swim, a little frolic, wink, wink, you know what I mean? And then they go out there. And let me tell you, I think another aspect of this that I think is so nice is that everyone is just happily, joyfully, gleefully frolicking through nature.
Yeah, banging.
They're fucking and smiling. Just like innocent fucking. And it's like, I had the thought, like, youth and beauty should be spent fucking. And like, isn't that true? Like, they're young, they're beautiful. Why can't they get out there, enjoy their lives? But like, the idyllic, like, I know that it's a fantasy, but that's what fantasies are for, you know, being horny.
I agree.
And for the ideal.
I agree with everything you just said, except for why limit it to youth? How about How about everybody?
Everybody. That's right. That's right.
You know? True. How about everybody?
Yes. Well, I'm just talking about like the what's your idea of youth is?
Well,
you're only as
us.
Young as you look. There you go. You're only as young as you pretend to be. And that's
there
all
you
that
go.
Matters.
Okay, fair enough.
You know
fair
what?
Enough.
Cause you know what? Raven looks amazing right now. Just gonna
oh,
say
totally,
she
yeah.
looks fantastic.
Oh, hey man, yeah.
And Kitten looked
yeah, passed away in 2022.
Fantastic.
But, you
yeah.
know, hey, man.
But whatever. So for a really long time, regardless, all of those things. But just presenting these fantasies of people who can just have sex joyfully for hours, you know, and that's the only thought in their head, and people just happily getting along, and then they can go do this and then go do something else. Just a fantasy that humans could be so unbothered.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That they could get along so much that everybody could just, without strings, run along and fuck this person and then be ready to go again and have sex with this person. And then it's everybody's romping about, like living out every desire that they have, eating eggs and cheeseburgers and just going about their day and making the most out of life.
And that's what I kind of what I was talking about earlier. The idea of staying in the zone is like, to me, that's also the zone. Like, live that way, you know, like you like live it. Live that way as much as you can.
One other thing. Can you imagine, Mike? Of course, we were talking about how people were just smarter back in this time. The references, like the rosebud tattoo.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Can you imagine people being excited about a tattoo? Like, oh my goodness, this lady has like a tattoo.
Yeah, like a tiny,
ooh,
tiny
tattoo. She
has tattoo.
A little rose. Yeah. Ooh, and then just like getting the camera really close on it. Like, look at this lady. She's so exotic. She has a tattoo. Have you heard? She has a tattoo. Guess where it is? You can't see it until her clothes are off. A tattoo. So like that's certainly a thing of the past, but nonetheless very exciting. And also, Raven in that interview said that they all had to wear head-to-toe body makeup.
Which is interesting because that's something I would
never
think about.
I didn't think that either. And they did a great job because Russ didn't want anything to get distracting and to have... I mean, people do have, like, little ruddy parts of their skin and things. Like, and I really appreciate, like, all their skin looks flawless.
Like, in my mind, it just is.
Yeah, and yeah. Ushi is the one who applied the body makeup, which is fantastic. But truly, like, everybody looks just sublime and glowing. So I wonder what body makeup they use because I want some. They look great.
Yeah. That's something, like, I would never think about. And just cool the way she talked about it. And just the filming, just how they were filming and, you know, the all day. And they were just living it. They were living there. And, in fact,
he
didn't want people leaving the camp, basically. She said he basically ran it like a military operation.
Yeah.
And she would sneak out at night, but she did get ratted out. One of the actors and producers,
Ken Kerr,
did
ratted
rat
her out.
And she said that Russ like was mad for like a long time.
Yeah, because she snuck out and went to a bar at night.
Yeah,
she's 20.
Yeah.
So yeah, or maybe she was 23. I think she said early 20s. Close enough. I don't know who's counting. You know what I mean? But then we get to Alice's Restaurant Part 2.
So Successful opens up another restaurant.
So Successful, because of Margot working there, everybody coming to marvel at Margot, she opens up another restaurant, and it has a jukebox. And of course, Margot says, I ain't one for speeches, so I'll do what I do best and give you a dance. And so then we get a groovy, groovy dance because Margot had been in real life like
throw a nickel in that jukebox.
Like a belly dancer, an exotic dancer of some sort. Like, so she gives a great dance, and I love the way she, I don't know, I love her Watusi. I'm going to call it a Watusi because everything kind of herky jerky, I call it Watusi. But truly, this brings up the point that I have been harping on, Mike, and I'm going to ask all of you wonderful people there with us, is there a way to do a sexy tap dance as a woman?
No.
Because I have not seen it. Now, men can do sexy tap dances, you know. You've seen Gene Kelly, Fred Astaire, Gregory Hines, like, doing sexy man tap dances, right? And they're, like, floating around looking, like, debonair. But it's just there's something about ladies tap dancing that's all kind of hunched over and herky jerky, you know, and weird.
You've been asking this for the past week, and then when Margot was doing her dance, you're like, now would you rather see this or her tap dance? I'm like, well, yeah, this obviously.
Yeah. There's never a time when I'm like, I'd rather her tappity tappity tap around. Like, I could really, I mean, Ginger Rogers, I think, and Roberta does that. Is it the one with the tap dancing in the rain that's so good? Like, that's okay, but still, I'd rather her do whatever Margot's doing right here.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's so good that it just drives these guys crazy. And I don't think we've mentioned the guy who I was just referring to as Brock Lesnar.
Raph.
And, you know, he's there. He's progressively getting more and more drunk. And
demanding beer. Open the beers with teeth. Just, like, chugging them one by one.
Margo's just getting everyone all riled up to the point where old Brock Lesnar takes her, slams her on the table, and
we got a John Finn's wife situation.
We got a Nick Cave, John Finn's wife sitch, and Russ Meyer is in this scene, and she talks about this scene being like, it was pretty crazy. She got a point like she wasn't able to breathe. He was like on top of her. And
she's like, I'm actually getting assaulted.
People
He's
are
heavy.
Yelling, and people are like, and Russ Meyer's like, keep going, you know, and like, and again, she's saying this not in like a wilting flower way. She's just like, yep, that's what it was. It was totally insane. Like, yeah, like it was, what you see is pretty much what happened.
But then it's crazy because Raph then grabs Alice too, and he does like a wild, like strips her clothes off, throws her on top of Margo, like really violently. And then went to do like a double rape. Like,
yeah.
Just like cartoonishly absurd. Yeah. Then he grabs a woman under each arm.
Yeah.
Again, like a cartoon gorilla, and then pounds through the wall of the bar, which the breakaway wall, I mean, you can see that he dropped them going through it, and then that like hurt.
And Raven was like, yeah, no, she's like, yeah.
That hurt. I fell on my head.
Yeah. But again, she's just like, yeah, whatever. And like, yeah, it's Brock Lesnar just manhandling these.
And then Russ Meyer runs out and says, sorry about the rape.
Yeah, sorry about so good. So good. I would name this episode that if I didn't think we would get pulled.
I love that Raven did say that she thought that Russ Meyer looks like Clark Gable. And I'm like, I could see it. I could see where he has like a Clark Gable quality. Yeah. I thought that was really cute. But yes, and it's just... And it's absolutely absurd. And like,
when the table broke, that was real.
Yeah, the table actually did break.
That wasn't
under
part of
them.
It wasn't a breakaway. It wasn't a gimmick.
No, not a gimmick. A gimmick table. Like, yeah, I mean, they're going through all of it. And can you imagine? Like, I can't be an actor because I don't want to have to kiss people.
Well, again, it'd be like, and it's also like be like us bitching and moaning about the heat at the Hospital Fest New York. Like, no, that was part of it.
Yeah.
The brutality was part of it. The uncomfortableness, the reality was part of it.
Yeah. And then watching this, you understand that. You're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not saying that everybody has to do that, but it's just understanding that we wanted something extreme. You know,
exactly.
We wanted something that skirts the line of morality. We wanted something that skirts the line of decency.
And that's what we love about Russ Meyer.
And it does walk the edge.
Yeah, that's what's so great about it.
And it's like, wow, it's quite an edge. It's quite an edge that gets walked, but that's what we wanted to see. That's why we went to this place. It's not because we want to see the same thing every time. Like, you know, even just saying like comedy is something that's unexpected, right? It has to be something that you didn't expect to hear, because that's why it catches you by surprise and is funny. And that's why modern comedy is so unfunny, because no one's allowed to come out of nowhere and say something unexpected, because we're living in the panopticon now, and then everybody's going to tell on everybody, and that you aren't allowed to do anything unexpected, because if you do, then everybody's going to say, hey, you can't do that. So that's kind of why we come here, you know. It's almost like why we have to go to the past.
It's why we're in the past, and that's why we're in the underground.
But it's why this is so hilarious too, because your jaw is on the floor and you're like, I can't believe this happened. And like, to think this is something from the 70s, and you're like, holy shit, they actually did this. You know what I mean? Like, it's pretty amazing.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I just, tip of the hat to the fact that this even happened, came out, and exists. Like, it's really awesome. But if you think that your jaw dropped the farthest that it's going to drop, when that table fell and Raph marches out with two ladies under the arm, then you got another thing coming, because the more insane thing happens after Homer, our hero. I guess he's kind of a hero.
Paul's a
hero.
In a way,
Homer's a hero.
Homer, yes.
Homer takes, you know, chops up Raph, yes, with a chainsaw.
Yeah. And he gets, with an axe.
With an axe. Yeah. And he had gotten an axe himself. But then we have already, again, the chorus helps us out. But we've already forgotten about the murder mystery.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? We're like, who cares about, there's a murder mystery? There's a murder mystery? Oh, okay. She keeps telling us, but we just were like, we don't really care. Is this just absurd? Right? Is this just an absurd injection of something? And then we find out, no, we had been watching a murder mystery, because when the big reveal, are we going to spoil
it? I mean, yes.
We
got
to spoil it.
Yes.
I mean, we have to spoil it here. So stop it here if you don't know.
But also, don't worry about it.
Or just who cares? Yeah, it's going to be great.
Just stick with it.
So if you think your jaw couldn't drop further, then we get the big reveal of who the actual killer is, because in the end the ladies start fighting, and guess what? Alice reveals herself to be Ava Braun Jr.
Yes.
Her mother sacrificed herself to the fatherland, but she was getting along in years, and her dad loved incest, and he lost interest in her, and he had to choose other people because he didn't want to fuck her anymore because he was too old. So then her husband started fucking her, and she was fucking her dad, and she was jealous because she thought that she should have her husband to herself, and she was jealous of anybody who fucked her husband. Paul, poor Paul, who needs to shave his face on the top part, not the bottom.
What a great reveal and explanation. It's Ava Braun Jr.
and
she's
attacks-
jealous because her dad wasn't fucking her anymore.
Yes. And then her dad, Adolf Schwartz.
Yeah.
And then she attacks Margo because she says, the secret of Ava Braun Jr. will die with you, bimbo.
So
oh
incredible.
And then they run and run and run.
And they fight and they're running. And this is, I think, when Russ was telling her to run like a gazelle.
Run like a gazelle. Like
and they're
a gazelle.
Fighting. And it is this whole, the finale is great. But yeah, like you said, though, when Homer's axing up our old Brock Lesnar, I mean, it gets all, blood's getting everywhere, it gets super bloody, you know, like,
yeah,
I love the violent scenes in his movies, like in Super Vixens.
They're very violent.
They get like so insane. Yes. like when Charles Napier's killing
in the
tub, and it just gets so brutal.
It's gratuitous everything.
That's
the thing. It's gratuitous sex, it's gratuitous violence, it's gratuitous rape scenes, it's gratuitous every dropping of Ava Braun Jr. chases,
so good.
Food scenes, fucking everything. It's fantastic. And it's just like, and it's so funny because I knew it was going to happen. But again, I was still like, oh my God, I forgot how good this is.
Yeah, it's so good.
Like, you're really like, holy shit. Like, it's maximum absurdity, but just like good comedy. You do not see it coming.
But then
you have been told by the chorus that it's coming, but you don't see it coming.
And there is one more twist.
The epilogue 3, somewhere in Bavaria?
Well, it's that Margot is an undercover police officer this whole time. Yeah, she's been an undercover cop this whole time, which is
guess
amazing.
What, babe? Oh my God. And yes, she has been an undercover police officer. She was there to solve this crime. So that is also really good to know. And then we get to find out that, like, that's when she was making appearances. She was wearing the police uniform is what Margot wore when she went around. And that Russ Meyer would get annoyed when she wasn't staying in character and pretending to be Margot.
Well, what's great, too, is in the Answer Me interview, they ask, what's the best line of dialogue you've ever written? And Russ says, oh, I couldn't answer that. I'll tell you the best line that a girl in one of my films came up with. Raven de la Croix and I had gone to Europe to promote the film. And when reporters would press her with too many questions, she would say, what do I know? I'm only a woman.
Oh,
I love
God.
That, right? But again, like, her just going with it. And that's the thing.
Yes.
That's what you have. That's how you have to treat people who are trying to question you. You just go. You're like, oh, no, you're right. Yeah. No, I'm super offensive. Yeah. No, I'm tasteless. Yep. Yeah. Nope. You're right on all counts. Yep. You got it.
Yeah.
What do I know? I'm only a woman. Like, it's just all this. That's how to treat people who try to dissect it, try to break it down, try to disclaimer it.
I'm going to cancel out all nuance in this world and try to make it black and white. Yep. Like, that's stupidity.
Yes.
The nuance is the part where, you know, society is born. But I do think that one of his best lines that he wrote, Mike, would be that fellatio is its own reward, because they sure say is. That in here too. And it how fun
sure,
is that?
Sure is.
But yeah, what a wonderful police person! What a wonderful film! What a wonderful murder mystery!
I mean, look,
great.
Yeah, I mean, in many ways, this is probably my favorite, just because of our. I think of us watching this early on because I had the VHS. This is when it was, you know, the VHSs you can only get for the. What they would charge for rental, like $80. I think I got it off eBay for, you know, like cheaper or whatever. I couldn't believe it. Like, yeah. Oh, I got it. So this is one we had. Unfortunately, it went to the graveyard of the tour van that had the the VCR in it. But so happy that the Blu-ray is released from Severin. You know, they're all great in their own way. You know, Super Vixens also, I would put up, to me, Super Vixens and Up are like my two, they're the one-two punch for me as far as like that mid-70s era, both just so incredibly over the top. The chicks are just magnificent in it.
Well, they're just, they're such unique stories and unique in the way that they're presented.
And again, they are Russ Meyer. And that's what we love. Yeah. That's what we love in the underground. When the art is, it can't be anything else but them. It can't be anything else but Russ Meyer. It can't be anything else but, you know, Jamie Gillis being Jamie Gillis. You know, it can't be anything else but these things. And that's what great, you know, what we'll always look for in everything we do, from books to sound to film and just to living. Just living your life, living the life that can only be Tara, that can only be Mike, that can only be our crew. You know, it's just that's what we live for.
Yeah, why try to live someone else's life?
That's what we live for.
And to think of Russ Meyer, and I think that people have criticized him for just being all style, no substance, and it's absurd to me because there's so many things, there's so many hot points for the way people feel that are touched upon in all of his films, and that's why people get so offended. So to say that it's only style and it's not really representative of humanity fighting within itself, I think is just to underplay what he does. Well, and again, it's one of those things where people are just trying to undercut it and pretend that it's not something
that
they
enjoy. Well, I hope with the recent Blu-rays that Severin did, that Russ Meyer continues to offend people from the grave year in and year out, and give everyone's britches all in a tizzy. I just combined like a couple.
I think
I combined a couple.
I like that you said britches, though.
I'm excited to go through all the Blu-rays that Severin's done of the Russ Meyer movies, and hopefully they'll do more. I'm sure have plans for more of the estate of Russ Meyer.
Oh, I would love to see it.
Oh yeah, Mama.
We did have to watch Mae West after watching this.
So we watched My Little Chickadee.
My Little Chickadee with W.C. Fields in it too.
A fantastic follow up to Up, but Tara, don't know what we're doing next week. I don't have anything in mind, so it'll just be what we decide
Something.
To do. Got some cool interviews getting lined up, getting scheduled.
And we've had some good suggestions, so thank you for
we
your suggestions.
Sure have. So we're excited for this year. Kicking it off with Up felt incredibly appropriate. Well, Tara, I think it's time for diner food. Ugh. I think it's time to stay in the world.
Should I get a patty melt?
I think it's going to be something like that. It's time to stay in the world of Russ Meyer. Stay in the world of big tits, big asses, just keeping it horny like we do here in the world of underground espionage. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.